you're there in Deuteronomy chapter 5. And really, I just wanted to read that because that is the retelling of the Ten Commandments. So you normally go to Exodus chapter 20 for that. But we're going through the commandments one by one. Last week we did the first commandment, which is thou shalt have no other gods before me, or thou shalt have none other gods before me, as we see here, same thing. So we're going to do the second commandment this afternoon. This afternoon is thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. And what I want to get across here is that that it's actually thou shalt not make any graven image and bow down thyself unto them. You're in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 8, and just know that this is all one sentence from verse 8 to verse 10. And the reason I mention this is because there's more, like I said last week, there's more thou shalt nots than 10. So you have to know that some of these are combined into the same commandment. If you get down to the end of, like, thou shalt not covet, it's like thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. So obviously that's all talking about thou shalt not covet. And so just to kind of get that confusion out of there, some of them are very simple. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. You know, those are pretty simple to know that those are single commandments there. But in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 8 here, notice what it says. It says, thou shalt not make thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the waters beneath the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself unto them nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. So that's all one statement. That's all one sentence, okay? And the reason I say it is because what I'm going to get into, go to Leviticus chapter 19, and I preached on this before, but I don't believe that every graven image is inherently an idol, okay? And I'm going to get into my reasoning why. But I'll say this, any graven image that is known to be a religious graven image is going to be an idol, okay? So like Buddha, for example, you know, that's an idol, okay? Now, if you have it in your house, I would say, why do you have that in your house, right? You say, well, I'm not bowing down to it. Well, it's still, that's a graven image that is worshipped by people, okay? And so when it comes to, like, graven images, I'm going to be getting into the idea of that what makes them a graven image is that people worship and burn incense and bow down to them. But we're not going to have a, I'm not going to have a Buddha in my house. I'm not going to have a Krishna or whatever those ones for, like, Hinduism. We're not going to have any of that garbage around. You know, I don't want false gods in my house, you know. But what I'm going to be getting into is that your little girl's, like, wooden giraffe or something like that, you know, or, you know, like a wooden, you know, dinosaur or something like that. And you're like, well, it's a graven image. And what I'm going to get into is the fact that it has to be coupled with worship, meaning that, you know, it's not just that it's graven, though that's a part of this commandment, because we just got done with thou shalt have no other gods, right? So that's dealing with the fact that you're dealing with gods that, you know, obviously it's kind of an invisible thing, okay? So it's hitting on that. This is more tangible, okay? So it's dealing with having gods that are like literal like pieces of material, okay? Or associating the god with this piece of material, okay? Now, in Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 4, notice what it says. It says, turn ye not unto idols, nor make to yourselves molten gods. I am the Lord your God. So when it's talking about graven images and bowing down to them, what is it talking about? Like physical molten gods, right? It's talking about a physical god, you know. Now, it's silly that anybody would think that, like, this inanimate object is like a god, right? I mean, on the surface, I know we're believers, and we're looking at this through believer's eyes. But just honestly, you see this, like, statue, and you're like, it's a god, you know, and if I pray to it, it's going to do something for me. It's really silly. It's really just kind of foolish, because it is. That's what he's talking about here with this commandment. Now, go to Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 1. Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 1. And I know people have different opinions. People have different, like, they'll hold a little more conservative on this or less conservative on this when it comes to what they consider to be an idol. And ultimately, you have to, you know, be fully persuaded in your own mind what you believe to be an idol and what you believe to be wrong in this commandment. I do think there's some doubtful disputations, if you will, as far as what you think would cross the line there, okay? And so Because I'll say this, people could like literally worship anything, and then you'd be like, well, can I, you know, like, let's say there's people that literally worship a kind of car, right? You're like, well, I can't have that car because there's people out there that worship that car. You know what I mean? Like, you can get into that kind of silliness where it's like, well, that's really stupid, you know? But I'll say this, any mainstream religion, you know, that's well known, I'm not going to touch it, okay? And that even count, I'll count even like old school mainstream religions, like Roman mythology, Greek mythology, right? Those used to be like a mainstream type of religion. I'm not going to have, you know, Poseidon or Zeus or like things like that. Not because I'm afraid I'm going to bow down and worship them, but you know what? There millions of people died and went to hell believing in that stupidity, and I don't want anything like that around me, okay? So that's kind of my logic behind it. But in Leviticus chapter 26, verse 1 here, notice what it says. It says, "Ye shall make you no idols, nor graven image, nor rear you up a standing image, neither shall ye set up an image of stone in your land to bow down unto it, for I am the Lord your God." Okay, so just over and over again, and I just wanted to show you this because it's repeated over and over again. Leviticus talks about it. Obviously, we read Deuteronomy that's repeating what was said in Exodus. And throughout the Old Testament, you're going to see, you know, them worshiping other gods, you know, making these groves and idols and worshiping other gods. It's something that's very prevalent. And in the New Testament, it's prevalent as far as dealing with that, even with the churches in Asia. They were dealing with eating things sacrificed unto idols and different things like that. And you say, well, you know, that honor thy father and mother, and when you go down this list, let's say from commandment number 5 down to 10, those are repeated like verbatim in the New Testament, right? But thou shalt have no other gods, thou shalt not make any graven image, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. That's not like repeated verbatim like in the New Testament as far as that goes, but it's explicitly commanded, you know, like love the Lord thy God with all thy soul, with all thy mind, with all, you know, right? And then it says flee idolatry, you know, and it's like all the epistles are talking about to keep yourselves from idols, to, you know, flee this. And then what did Jesus say? Swear not at all, right? So you think about like taking the name of the Lord in vain and like vowing things that you shouldn't vow, right? Like I swear to God is what people will say, which I believe is taking the name of the Lord in vain, because you're swearing about something that you say, well, it's meaningless. Well, then you're using it in vain, right? You're calling out to him in vain. This isn't a sermon on that. But what I'm saying is that that stuff is taught explicitly, even though that commandment's not like explicitly said in the New Testament. But that being said, his idols is still going to be an issue. And it's going to be an issue at the very end, too. Go to Revelation chapter 9, and I just want to show you that idolatry is still going to be a thing. This is not something that just went away. It's like people that believe that demon possession is like not here anymore. You know, like it's like all that went away. Where did you see that? I see it in the New Testament with Paul like rebuking unclean spirits and all that, and I see unclean spirits mentioned in Revelation 19. So, and the same thing with idolatry is that it's still going on. Okay, and Revelation chapter 9 and verse 20 here. Notice what it says. It says, "And the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts." Okay, so it's basically saying, you know, all these plagues came upon them and they would not repent of that. They're still worshiping these idols. And the Bible also, and I hit this last week, so I don't want to really get into it this week, but the fact that when they're worshiping these idols or these other gods, they're worshiping devils, okay? They're worshiping unclean spirits. They're worshiping the devil in a lot of these cases. And so it's not a matter of like, well, they have their God and we have our God. No, we have the God and they have devils, okay? That's how you equate it there. Now, go to Daniel chapter 5. And the thing that I want to see here is that in Revelation chapter 9, did you see the material? Gold, silver, brass, stone, wood. Okay? In some places, you'll just see silver and gold. Some places, you'll just see gold. And what I want to get across here is that I don't believe it's about the material, okay, that makes a graven image. Okay? I believe you could have a graven image of plastic. Okay? You could have a molten, I mean, literally, like, you're... The plastic's molten and you pour it into a mold and then it's like, boom, you have a Buddha that's plastic. Would you say that a Buddha over here that's plastic and a Buddha that's gold is any less an idol? Okay? And the reason I say that, and you say you're being silly with the material, okay, well, how about your baby dolls? Okay. The reason I bring this up is because I've had many questions about this. Okay, I've had many questions. I know I preached on this before, but I've had many questions about this. Like, I've had people send me messages saying, hey, do I need to throw out all my kids' toys? Okay, because, you know, they're graven images, they're molten images, and all that. Now, I always put a preface on there, like, you need to be fully persuaded about this, okay? Because if anything is not of faith, then it's sin, right? Meaning that if you literally think that's an idol, then you need to get rid of it, okay? So if you're not convinced after what I show you here that things could be like a graven or molten image that's not an idol, then you need to get rid of all graven and molten images that are around you, or you're sinning because you're doing it not by faith and you're doubting, right? That's a doubtful disputation. But my point with that is that I don't believe it's about material. I think he's giving a list of materials, but I don't think it's all-inclusive, right? Because plastic is a synthetic material, by the way. Okay, so it's not like, I don't think they had plastic items back then. You know, it's something that later on became, a material that's being used. It didn't mention glass. Okay, what about glass objects? Say, well, it mentioned stone, and technically, glass is sand that's molten into a shape. Okay, so we can get into the weeds with all this stuff, but really, does it really matter about what material it is? And that's the reason that I want to get into this. Now, Daniel chapter 5 is dealing with Belshazzar, who the straw that broke the camel's back is that he was worshiping these other gods, and he was not only worshiping these other gods, but he was drinking out of God's vessels, like the vessels that were from the house of God, and he was drinking out of them to praise other gods. Okay, notice what it says here in Daniel chapter 5, verse 22. And now his son, O Belshazzar, has not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords and thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. And I love how it just keeps saying, it's like they can't see, they can't hear, they can't know, they can't walk, right? They're inanimate objects. And you almost look at this and be like, you can imagine God's like, what are you doing? Right? Like, why in the world would you think that this object that you made, right? That you made, and it goes back to Moses, like right after he gives these commandments, right? He's going up to get them written on the 10 tables of stone. And when he comes down, they make a golden calf, and they say, this is the God that brought us out of the land of Egypt. And it's just baffling to you because you're like, it's like the emperor's new clothes. Have you ever heard that phrase before? The emperor's new clothes. Okay, and the idea is that the emperor's naked, but everybody's saying, listen, he's wearing a new clothing. And everybody is just trying to you have to all be in on it, right? You have to all be like, yeah, he's wearing new clothes. Don't you see his new clothes? And it takes that one person to speak up and be like, no, he's naked. He's not wearing any clothes. And that's what it comes down to, is that it's like they're all in this delusional land. And then someone's got to be like, what are you talking about? You just made it. How in the world, if you just made it today, how in the world did it bring us out of the land of Egypt? And so idolatry is stupidity. Okay, it's on another level of just stupidity, in my opinion. And I can imagine just how God has to feel that, you know, they would look at this inanimate object that they made. It's not like they just found it somewhere, right? That would make more sense to be like, well, I found it here. It dropped from Jupiter, right? You know, you have the image that dropped from Jupiter they talk about in Ephesus and all that. But they even, admit, even in that passage, that they made it. You know, their craftsmanship is in jeopardy. They're talking about why? Because they're making all these idols, okay? So the idea, though, is that, you know, it's made of all these materials, but I don't think that the material is, you know, the idea of why it's inherently evil, okay? I think he's just giving you a list of things because those are precious metals, okay? Because let's be honest, who here has seen a plastic Buddha or a plastic idol that people are really holding up with reverence, right? It's always like something that's plated in gold, has all these jewels, and it's supposed to look magnificent, right? So that's why that's the list, because that's, let's just be honest, that's where the idols are going to be, right? But go to Exodus chapter 25. Exodus chapter 25. And what I want to show you is I want to show you that there are items or graven images that God told Moses to make that weren't inherently an idol. Okay. And so I want to get to that. I just want to prove this point. And the reason I'm proving this point is because I don't want you to throw out all your kids' toys. Because obviously I think that we need to understand what is the second commandment talking about. Okay. And when you understand it, it doesn't just say thou shalt not make any graven image, period. Okay. It says thou shalt not make any graven image, and thou shalt not bow down and worship it. Okay. That's all coupled together. And so it's not smart to be making graven images that's going to be made for that, okay, or to have that around in general. But in Exodus chapter 25, so mind you, Exodus 20, Ten Commandments. Exodus 25, we're going to see that God tells Moses to make cherubims out of gold, okay, which are animals. Okay, they're living creatures. They are beasts, okay. Now, the word animal is not used in the Bible, but the word beast is used, or living creature, okay? And that commandment, remember the commandment said anything that's in heaven, that's in the earth, that's under the earth, it's basically saying anything, right? That's an all-encompassing way to say whatever it is, don't make a graven image of it, okay? And don't bow down to it. Notice in verse 18, so Exodus chapter 25, verse 18, it says, and thou shalt make two cherubims of gold, of beaten work shalt thou make them, in the two ends of the mercy seat, and make one cherub on the one end and the other cherub on the other end. Even of the mercy seat shall ye make the cherubims on the two ends thereof. And the cherubims shall stretch forth their wings on high, covering the mercy seat with their wings, and their faces shall look one toward to another. Toward the mercy seat shall the faces of the cherubims be. Okay. Now, you say faces. Well, cherubims, each cherubim has four faces. Go to Ezekiel chapter 10. Ezekiel chapter 10. And I know I preached on the cherubims, the seraphims, and all that stuff. But what's going on here? Well, when he made the Ark of the Covenant, you've all seen Indiana Jones, right? but it's not that out of the ordinary, right? You had these two, like, winged creatures that were, like, covering the middle that didn't have anything on it, right? You know? But I was a big Indiana Jones fan. The Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they found the Ark of the Covenant. What was on top of it? It's supposed to be two cherubims that are facing each other. Okay. Now I'm not saying that thing's accurate. Okay, it's Hollywood. but that being said, that's what he's talking about in Exodus chapter 25. Is that on top of the Ark, he made these two cherubims that were supposed to be covering the mercy seat. Now the mercy seat was what Jesus ultimately was going to be sprinkling in heaven. But this is where the high priest would come in every year with the blood of bulls and of goats, and they would sprinkle the mercy seat that was on the Ark of the Covenant. Okay, so this is a very important item. But the idea, though, is that he made these, and then in Ezekiel chapter 10, it tells us about what cherubims look like. In verse 14, it says, and every one had four faces. The first face was the face of a cherub. In another place, it calls it the face of an ox. So really, it's the face of an ox. And the second face was the face of a man, and the third face, the face of a lion, and the fourth face, the face of an eagle, and the cherubims were lifted up. This is the living creature that I saw by the river of Kibar. Okay, so it's a living creature. In the New Testament, when it talks about the seraphims, it calls them beasts, okay, another way to say animal. Okay, but they have four faces. That means that when he made these cherubims, they had a face of a man, the face of an ox, the face of an eagle, and the face of a lion. Okay. Now, he just got done saying, don't make unto thee any graven images. You'll see the same thing happen when we go to thou shalt not kill. And then later on in Exodus, he'll say, thou shalt kill. And he's talking about, you know, capital punishment and different things like that, okay? So you got to take it all as a whole, or this wouldn't make sense. Now, another thing that he tells Moses to make is the brazen serpent. Now, go to Numbers chapter 21. Numbers chapter 21. Numbers chapter 21. Numbers chapter 21 and verse 4 there. Numbers chapter 21 verse 4, it says, and they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom, and the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. And the people spake against God and against Moses. Wherefore, have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Therefore, the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he take away the serpents from us. And Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said unto Moses, make thee a fiery serpent and set it upon a pole. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live. And Moses made a serpent of brass and put it upon a pole. And it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. Now this is, not only, first of all, God told him to do this, but this is mentioned in John chapter 3. You know, as the serpent was lifted up in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. Okay, so this serpent pictures the Lord Jesus Christ on the cross, and the fact that he's taking sin and look and live, right? You know, we had that song, Look and Live, My Brother Live. Well, this idea of looking to the serpent and living, all this stuff parallels there. Now, I don't believe the serpent was wrong here because God told him to do it, but it became wrong later on. Go to 2 Kings chapter 18. 2 Kings chapter 18. So here's a case where God told him to make this image, but then they turned it into an idol. Okay? So this is where, this is one of those examples where I believe, I don't think it's inherently wrong to have this brazen serpent, because obviously God told them to do it, but they ended up turning it into an idol that they worshipped. Okay? So in 2 Kings chapter 18, notice what it says in verse 3. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father did. He removed the high places, and brake the images, and cut down the groves, and break in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan. Okay, so you see what happened here is that Moses made his brazen serpent. You know, it saved a lot of people because they looked to it. God basically said, look unto this serpent and you'll live. Okay, and then later on they took the serpent, and this is Hezekiah, by the way, that's doing this. Basically, this serpent had been there for a long time, and they ended up turning it into an idol. Okay, and they turned it into an idol. They're burning incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan. But what did Hezekiah do? He broke it in pieces. Okay, so there's an idea. There's a place where a graven image is turned into an idol. And I also want to show you that the temple itself had cherubims and different things in it that were graven in it. Okay, and the reason I point this out is because this is God's house. This is, you know, something that he told them to do. Go to 1 Kings chapter 6. 1 Kings chapter 6. And then I'm going to be getting into... So the reason I point this stuff out is because I just want you to know that, hey, you know, I personally believe that if your child has, you know, a wooden, you know, giraffe or a wooden this or that, then it's not wrong. Now, if you're bowing down and burning incense to it, that's wrong, okay? You know, if you're superstitious over things, right, like a rabbit's foot, or different things like that, then yeah, that's wrong, okay? Because you're holding that up as if it's something when it's nothing, okay? And so, but if it's just like a toy or something like that, I don't believe it's wrong. But again, this is something where you have to be fully persuaded in your own mind, okay? So if you look at this and you say, well, I think these are just exceptions, but I think everything else, you know, like every graven image is wrong except for the cases where God said to do it, okay? And that's fine. You can hold that ground. I'm not against you. I don't personally take that stance, okay? But in 1 Kings chapter 6 here, dealing with the temple that Solomon built, notice what it says in verse 22. It says, in the whole house he overlaid with gold, until he had finished all the house. Also, the whole altar that was by the oracle he overlaid with gold. And within the oracle he made two cherubims of olive tree, even 10 cubits high, and 5 cubits was the one wing of the cherub, and 5 cubits the other wing of the cherub. From the uttermost part of the one wing unto the uttermost part of the other were 10 cubits. And it goes into this whole thing as far as this cherubims. It says in verse 27, and he set the cherubims within the inner house. It says in verse 29, and he carved all the walls of the house round about with carved figures of cherubims and palm trees and open flowers within and without. And the floor of the house he overlaid with gold, within and without. So this is a pretty magnificent house, right? I mean, good night, the floors are gold. But all that to say is that there's carvings, not only, so you had the two cherubims that were on the Ark of the Covenant, right, that were going to be in the house of God, but then he made these two cherubims that overshadowed where the Ark of the Covenant was at, okay? Which makes sense if you think about this. When you look at the cherubims, how many were there? There were four, right? So you have four that are literally on top of the Ark of the Covenant, and then you had two that were over top of the covenant, and then you had two that were covering that. And obviously we know that Satan was the cherub that covereth, right? And so he was the fifth, but he obviously fell. So, but we see four cherubims, and four cherubims ultimately in the house of God. Then also in chapter 7, so 1 Kings chapter 7, it says in verse 23, and he made a molten sea, 10 cubits from the brim to the other. It was round about, and its height was 5 cubits, and a line of 30 cubits to compass it round about. Notice in verse 25, it stood upon 12 oxen, 3 looking toward the north, 3 looking toward the west, and 3 looking toward the south, and 3 looking toward the east. And the sea was set upon above upon them, and all their hinder parts were inward. Okay, so basically these oxen that were there. Okay, it talks about in verse 29, and on the borders that were between the ledges were lions, oxen, and cherubims, and upon the ledges there was a base above and beneath the lions and oxen were certain additions made of thin work. Okay, so just throughout the house of God, you see these different images and different molten images and carvings and all that stuff that's going on. You say this, okay, well, that's Solomon's temple, though. It didn't say, thus saith the Lord, make this, okay? So, granted, it doesn't say that about Solomon's, but go to Ezekiel chapter 41. Ezekiel chapter 41, and this is thus saith the Lord. Okay, now, I personally believe Ezekiel, at the end of Ezekiel, you see all these dimensions and stuff about the city. I believe this is talking about the city and the temple that was coming after their captivity, okay? So that would be like the second temple. Because if you think about it, when Haggai and Nehemiah and Ezra, when they were building this, they needed something to go off of, right? And I believe they were going off of Ezekiel, okay? And if you think about the timeline of Ezekiel, Ezekiel's in that captivity, right? The book starts off with him being so many years into the captivity. And I believe God's giving the blueprint for the house that's built in Haggai's day and Ezra's day and in Nehemiah's day. Does that make sense? So that's what I believe that's talking about. Some people believe it's talking about the third temple. I think it could be. I think that the Antichrist and the Jews could use that, you know, to make the third temple. That's another sermon for another day. But it's talking about oblations and sacrifices in there. So I don't believe this is talking about like what we should be doing is building a temple, okay? I think this is talking about they're still in the Old Testament, and this is the temple in Ezekiel chapter 41 and on that Jesus is going to be standing in, right? This is the temple that was in Jesus' day, okay? So notice what it says in verse 1 there. It says in Ezekiel chapter 41, verse 1, it says, afterward, he brought me to the temple and measured the posts 6 cubits broad on the one side and 6 cubits broad on the other side, which was the breadth of the tabernacle. Now, the reason I read that first verse is because chapter 40 is talking about like the wall and the city, and chapter 41 is talking about the actual temple, okay? So for sake of time, I'm not going through all the details of the temple here, but look at verse 15. Verse 15, it says, and he measured the length of the building over against the separate place which was behind it, and the galleries thereof, on the one side and on the other side, and 100 cubits with the inner temple and the porches of the court, the doorposts and narrow windows and the galleries round about on their 3 stories over against the door, sealed with wood round about, and from the ground up to the windows, and the windows were covered to that above the door, even unto the inner house and without, and by all the wall round about, within and without, by measure. So we're just talking about the dimensions, what's all there. It's 3 stories. And I believe what's going on there is that there's these chambers. So that you kind of have a high ceiling, and then you have like these 3 chambers, but then there's like this center portion where it's all high up, all that stuff. Not that important for what I'm talking about right here. But notice what it says in verse 18. And it was made with cherubims and palm trees, so that the palm tree was between a cherub and a cherub. And every cherub had two faces, so that the face of a man was toward the palm tree on the one side, and the face of a young lion toward the palm tree on the other side. It was made through all the house round about. From the ground unto above the door were cherubims and palm trees made on the wall of the temple. So these cherubims are made also in that temple as well. Okay, so basically the temple that Jesus stood in, I believe there was these images of cherubims. Okay, and if you can remember, this is where God, you know, it says, you know, make everything and after the fashion that I said when I was on the mount, right? That's what God said to Moses. That's what they did there. And so this is why I believe that, you know, it's not necessarily just because it's a graven image is inherently wrong, but if you bow down and worship it. So if they start bow down and worshiping cherubims, then obviously that's an idol, okay? And that's wicked, and that's breaking the second commandment. But if you say, well, I think that's just an exception, that's fine, okay? That's fine if you want to take that stance that, well, I think those are all exceptions, unless thus saith the Lord, make this graven image. I believe all graven images are wrong. That's fine. I don't personally take that stance. I believe that it needs to be something that's being worshipped or burning incense to it and stuff like that. Now, let's get into Catholics and Orthodox. So you say, why are you bringing that up? Well, they literally have a different set of Ten Commandments, okay? And what they do is they try to hide this second commandment, okay? They try to hide it, and they basically put no other gods before me and graven image, and they put that all into one. They basically don't have any other gods before me. And he's like, well, how do they have 10 then, right? Wouldn't there be just 9? Well, what they do is they take the last commandment, thou shalt not covet, and they say, well, that's two different commandments. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, and thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Two different commandments. Stupidity, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it doesn't make sense that you would cut that off. And that, you know why it doesn't make sense? Because we read Deuteronomy 5. When you look at Exodus chapter 20 and Deuteronomy 5, you'll see that it's out of order, right? In one place, it'll be like, thou shalt not desire thy neighbor's wife. And in the other place, it'll have that afterwards, right? So it'll put them in out of order. You'll be like, why did it do that? Probably because of that right there. You know, it's like God knew that the Catholic Church is going to try to put these like as separate commandments. So which one is a Catholic Church? You know, which covet is 9 and 10, right? Because Deuteronomy puts them in different orders, okay? But here's how they get out of it, okay? They'll say, well, we're not worshiping these idols. You know, idol, they don't say idols. They'll say, we're not worshiping these images or these statues. We're venerating them, right? We're venerating them. So, you know, a lot of times you're just like, well, you know, it's worshiping. But here's the thing. Look up the word venerate. If you look it up in dictionary.com, you'll find that venerate or veneration means to regard or treat with reverence. Okay, well, that's bad enough. But if you look up the etymology, you know what it says? To reverence, worship, right? Literally, etymology of venerate is to worship. So, you know what? They're like, we are venerating. That means worship. What are you talking about? Okay, so even the word they're trying to use to try to cop out of it. But here's the thing. I've been to Catholic Church, okay? I've been there. I know that they have an image of Mary holding a baby, okay? Now, obviously, that's not Mary and that's not Jesus, right? But it's supposedly supposed to be the Virgin holding the baby Jesus, right? And they have all these candles set up. And then they have this thing that you kneel on. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to light a candle and do a prayer and pray towards that saying, you know, like the Hail Mary or something like that. Now, what definition of worship are you talking about? Because to me, that is worshiping. You're on your knees. You're burning a candle unto this image. And that's not the only thing, right? I mean, they have images of Joseph and Mary and Jesus, you know, on the cross and all this stuff. It's blasphemous because there's no way that that actually is Jesus. I'll say this. I don't know what Jesus looked like, but I know he didn't look like that. You know, I can guarantee that. They didn't look like that. But the idea, though, is that they'll try to, like, wiggle out of it. But this goes for Catholics and Orthodox, okay? And don't think that the Orthodox, like the Greek Orthodox or these other Russian Orthodox, that they're saved because you saw, like, Brother Nathaniel online, like, rebuking the Jews, okay? Some of you know what I'm talking about. But there's like this, I don't know if he's Russian or like, I think he's Russian Orthodox or something like that. But he's got a YouTube channel and he's like rebuking the Jews and all this other stuff. And you're like, get him, man. But at the same time, you're like, this guy's an Orthodox, right? This guy's not saved. And he's like worshiping idols and all this other stuff. And but all to say is that, you know, there's a big problem there. And where do they get that from? Well, it's called the Roman Catholic Church for a reason, okay? It stemmed from Rome, which had Roman gods. Now, the Romans, they borrowed everything from the Greeks, okay? And just to give you a little history lesson, but the Greeks were very advanced when it came to literature, when it came to philosophy. And when the Romans took over the Greeks, they basically adopted all that, okay? They would have Greek tutors, so this is why the lingua franca in Jesus' day was Greek, because most Romans knew Greek because they were brought up under Greek-speaking people to learn Greek mythology and to learn Greek literature and Greek philosophy, okay? So that stuff just kind of went over into Roman mythology. And if you look at all the gods in Rome and in Greece, they're all the same. They just have different names. They all have the god of the sea, the god of the underworld, you know. And I always mix them up because I don't care, right? But, you know, which one, is it Apollos or Zeus? You know, which one's the Greek one, you know? You're like, I saw Hercules. I know which one it is. But but the idea is, though, that they basically just borrowed them all, okay? Now, that being said, the Roman Catholic Church, what did they do? They substituted the Roman gods for saints. And so, you know, Jesus is like Zeus, or the Father's like Zeus, I'm not sure, you know. But then they have, like, something for Mary. They have something for, you know, like, they have the saint of the animals. They have the saint of the sea and the saint of this, saint of that. And you're supposed to pray to those people. You say, oh, they don't teach that. I went to Catholic Church. I remember people literally telling me, you need to pray to this saint if you're sick. So, you know, who you selling a bill of goods to, you know? Be like, well, that was yours. Okay, I guess that one Catholic church in West Virginia was teaching some weird stuff, but that's just nowhere else, right? No one else teaches that. But yet, every Catholic person I run into says the same thing. You know, Brother Anthony grew up Catholic, and he'll be testified to the same things. We laugh about it because we all know about all the different things. Because, listen, the Catholic Church is all basically scripted, and they're all preaching the same things. It's all coming, it's funneling down from, you know, the Vatican, pretty much. Okay? So that, all that to say is that Catholicism is guilty of idol worship. They're guilty of this second commandment, hardcore. Orthodoxy, the same way. And listen, you know what? America adopted a lot of this garbage. If you go down to Washington, D.C., you'll see like some Poseidon things, and you'll see these other goddesses and gods that they're like putting up on, that they're making these graven images to. And you know what? It's all garbage. And you know what? People can be idols too. You know, I think I talked about this last week about, like, you know, how they did that with Jack Hiles, right? They made this image to you know, Jack Hiles. I don't want images of anybody, you know, that I would look up to, okay? You know, like Moses or Elijah. First of all, you don't know what he looks like, right? It's always going to be this, like, you know, this big long beard, you know, and, you know, he's holding the Ten Commandments. That's how you know it's Moses, right? But the idea, though, is that all that prompts to is that, hey, I need to reverence this image. I need to venerate this image. Or there's superstition, okay? Because people are like, oh, you know, they want to take down this image. I don't give a rip if they want to take down that image, okay? I'm not superstitious over it, you know? Now, obviously, is our country, the people that want to tear it down, are they wicked? Of course they're wicked, you know? They want to murder babies, and, you know, they have no idea why they're tearing it down. They hate the Bible, whatever it is. Obviously, they're wicked. They want to do it. But in the end, that doesn't mean anything to me, right? I didn't ask to put that image up, and God didn't ask to put that image up. So, you know what? If they tear down all the statues in America, I don't give a rip, okay? And you know what? That may not be popular today in the Republican ticket, you know? Like, oh, we need to keep all this. I don't care. You know, if they want to keep Stonewall Jackson up, that's fine. But I'll say this, you know, it shouldn't be out-of-state people, and it shouldn't be these people that don't know what they're talking about, just, you know, like Man Bun coming out there screaming about masks, determining what, you know, we do in this area. I'll say that much, at least. But idolatry, you know what? Idolatry, I hit this last week. Go to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. Idolatry isn't just something with graven images. This can obviously be with people, any object. People worship the sun, right? And it actually, in the Bible, I don't have it in my notes here, but it talks about not to worship the host of heaven. You know, the sun, moon, and stars. And people do that, right? They worship that type of stuff. Now, are the sun, moon, and stars inherently evil? Are they, you know, a graven image that should never be there? No, God made them, obviously. But people worship them, therefore they're idols, and, you know, it's against the commandment. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5, it says, "Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry." And so this is where I think where it hits home is covetousness, okay? You know, what is covetousness? It's desiring something that doesn't belong to you, okay? And what that does is that it becomes, covetousness will make material things your God, okay? And so cars can be that way, houses can be that way, you know, I don't know, like what are people like? You know, the different things that people would want, boats. I don't want a boat. I want a friend that has a boat because I don't want to have to deal with the boat, okay? But if anybody wants to have a boat, I'm all for you having a boat. Just invite me out to the lake when you're going out on that boat, okay? But all I'd say is that obviously material things can be idols. People can be idols. Good night, the celebrities out in the world. And, you know, I don't know who would want to have them as, like, idols. But you know, people worship the feet that these people walk on, and that is wickedness. The Bible says in 1 Samuel 15, I read this last week, in verse 23, it says, "Stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry." Okay, so that I believe is talking about, like, okay, if you're looking at a commandment in the Bible and you're like, I don't want to do it, I don't agree with it, and you're just stubborn about it, I believe what you're doing is putting your own will and your own thought process in place of God. Like, you're basically making yourself an idol against God. Okay. And then we talk about women. Okay, women could be idols. Okay, so, and this, you know, talking, you know, not that we have young men in the room right now, but, you know, young single men that are looking to marry one day, the idea of basically women taking up your whole life, okay? And ladies, this can happen with men, you know, is that's all you care about, that's all you think about, is that right there. And there's nothing wrong, ladies, if you're wanting to get married one day, to be thinking about that. And men, there's nothing wrong if you want to get married one day to be thinking about that. But that should never just completely encompass your life to where that's all you're thinking about, that's all you're working towards, because obviously then you're putting God on the back burner, okay? And I want to read this to you. You know, go to Proverbs chapter 31, Proverbs chapter 31. Dealing with Solomon. Solomon dealt with idols at the end of his life, but it wasn't because Solomon was just like, man, I was missing out on this idol stuff, you know? You know, what's this stuff with just one God and no idols, right? He didn't just wake up one day and be like, man, I want some idols. No, it was women, right? He married a bunch of women that were not saved, that were of these other countries, that have all these other gods, okay? So ultimately, I believe Solomon basically was just appeasing women. Okay, he was appeasing his multiple wives that he had, and it was wickedness. But notice what it says in 1 Kings chapter, I'm sorry, you're in Proverbs 31, but in 1 Kings 11, verse 4, it says, "For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the God of his father, with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father." So it's basically saying, you know, in his old age, his wives turned away his heart. Isn't that what he said in Deuteronomy 17 when he says, don't multiply wives unto you? And the reasoning for that was is that they'll turn away your heart from God. And that's exactly what happened with Solomon. But in Proverbs 31 and verse 3, Lemuel's mother warned him about this. In verse 3, it says, "Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings." Okay? And I know I preached on this a little bit when I was dealing with, wives and husbands and stuff like that. The idea that, husbands, you just want to please your wife. Well, that's all fine and good, being married. And I kind of talked about that threefold cord on like how you kind of have to give up a little bit of strength of your own to be married and to be in that situation. But you don't want to make it to where it's like that's all you do, right? You're just pleasing your wife. That's what your life is about, is pleasing your wife. Same thing, ladies, about pleasing your husband. It should not just be all about pleasing your husband. But pleasing God and obviously pleasing your husband so that you guys can work together and serve God. Now, this is where I believe it gets real for us as far as the future is concerned. Go to Daniel chapter 11. Daniel chapter 11, dealing with the Antichrist. Okay. The pivotal point in Revelation, the pivotal point in end times prophecy has to do with an idol. Okay. So you say, well, that graven image thing, that idol stuff, that doesn't really apply to us here in America, does it? Well, I could show you many places with stubbornness, covetousness, and all the stuff that people are doing that are making people idols that definitely applies to America. But I'm talking about the physical idol that's made of some kind of substance that people are going to bow down and worship. That is going to be the pivotal point in end times prophecy. And I already read to you in Revelation chapter 9 where it says that they repented not to worship devils and idols and all that stuff that's made of all this stuff. Okay, but in Daniel chapter 11, verse 36, it says this. It says, "The king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined shall be done. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all." Now, this is the verse right here in verse 37 where people say, well, I think he's a queer. Well, he's obviously reprobate, so he could be whatever, right? But I don't believe that's what this is stating, okay? Meaning that he just likes men, okay? I believe in context, what are you talking about? That he's not regarding any type of God. Okay, and it says, nor the desire of women. Okay, insert Solomon in there, right? What did he do? He regarded the desire of women, which was what? Other gods. Okay, and I believe it's also saying that the Antichrist is not going to give his strength unto women. Okay, that means that the Antichrist is going to be strong. Okay, does that make sense? Meaning that Lemuel, he said, if you want to be a strong leader, don't give your power unto women. Okay? The Antichrist is going to be a foe to be reckoned with. Okay? He's not going to be tossed to and fro with what the desires of women are. Does that make sense? Like, he is literally going to exalt himself above every god besides Satan himself. Okay? So it's just kind of showing the mindset of the Antichrist. And go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 because it shows you where this happens at. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. But the pivotal point is the abomination of desolation. That is the pivotal point. That's where I'm going to show you where Jesus says, when you see this, then you know. Okay? And what's going on at that point? Well, in Daniel chapter 11, he's talking about how he's going to, exalt himself or magnify himself above every god. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, "Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and by our gathering together unto him," talking about the day of the Lord, the rapture, right? Verse 2, "that you be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit nor by word nor by letter as from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand." So what is he saying? He's saying, don't be troubled to think that the day of Christ is at hand, meaning that it's right here. Okay, it can happen at any moment. Verse 3, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed." So there's two things that have to happen, right? There has to be a falling away, and that man of sin has to be revealed. And this is how he's going to reveal himself. Verse 4, "Who's the who? Son of perdition, the man of sin, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. This is the pivotal point. This is when you know. Remember, what did he say? It's not at hand, because that day is not going to come until this happens. Falling away, and the man of sin be revealed. You know what that means? Is that after that happens, guess what? It's at hand. That's what it's saying. It's not saying that the day of Christ will never be at hand, because that wouldn't make any sense, right? One day is going to be at hand, okay? But it's basically saying that this has to happen first, and he's going to show himself that he is God. And what does he do in that temple when he says that he is God? Go to Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13. And verse 13. So, in Revelation 13, before verse 13 here, you see the same thing mentioned with the Antichrist on how he's going to blaspheme God and his tabernacle, and he's going to make war with the saints. But notice what happens in verse 13. And this is talking about the false prophet, right? The false prophet is talking about, it says, and he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth, by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast. Here we go. We're going to have an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he caused it all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast of the number of, or the number of his name. Here's wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, or 666, which you can see on any monster that's out there in the store today. Stab with the monster drink. No, but all I'd say is that what are we dealing with here? Is that the Antichrist ascends up out of the bottomless pit, right? He's killed. He ascends up out of the bottomless pit. He goes into the temple, and he's sitting there as God. He's saying, I'm God. And he's sitting in the temple saying that he is God. Then the false prophet comes in with all these signs and wonders and says, hey, we need to make an image to him. And that this image is not only, it's going to speak, right? So it's basically going to be an image. It's not just going to be like an inanimate object that doesn't speak, but there's going to be some kind of supernatural, devilish work going on here where this thing could actually talk, okay? And basically, and it talks about the image itself causing the people to die, okay? But notice that it's about them that worship the beast, okay? It doesn't say that, well, you know, you just, you know, you're afraid and you recanted Christ, okay? No, you have to worship the beast, okay? Which is impossible for a believer to do, okay? Because if it were possible, he would deceive the very elect, which means it's not possible. But this culminates to what's the vocal point of what Jesus is getting across as far as what we're going to know. When are we going to know that we are there, right? It's at the doors. Go to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, I believe this is the abomination desolation. So Revelation 7:13, when you're dealing with this image that's made unto the beast. This is the ultimate idol in the Bible, okay? And if you think about it, isn't the tribulation the ultimate tribulation, which is the world has never seen? Isn't this going to be the ultimate day of the Lord, which the world has never seen? Isn't this going to be the ultimate wrath of God, which the world has never seen? Then this is going to be the ultimate idol that the world has ever seen. This idol is going to destroy people, okay? Literally. You know, like literally given power to destroy people, right? But in Matthew chapter 24 and verse 15, it says, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. So notice, what is he making? A standing image. Okay, and you'll see that in other places in the Bible. It's talking about idols. It'd be like, don't make unto you a graven image or a standing image. Okay? Mark chapter 13 says the same thing, pretty much. Verse 14, it says, but when ye shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it ought not, let him that readeth understand, and let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains. Okay? So I believe this is end times, this is something that hasn't happened yet, that there's going to be a temple, and this is the end game. You know, this is where the Antichrist is saying he's God, and the false prophet is putting an image, an idol, in the house of God and says, you need to worship this or you'll die, or you can't buy or sell. Okay? This is the ultimate idol. So the second commandment is as valid today as it was back then. Okay? And so it's not going away. It's not like, well, we're in the New Testament, we don't deal with idols anymore. Well, obviously, there's still cultures that deal with idols. Look at Hinduism. And look how many people are in Hinduism. It's huge. Right? You're billions and billions of people in there, right? Or billions. I guess not billions, billions, right? There's 8 billion people on there, right? But you're dealing with over a billion, I believe, that are Hindus. And it's like Islam is like almost, it's like 1.8 billion. And the only reason Christianity is like the most percentage is because Catholics are in that group. And like I said, Catholics are guilty of the idolatry just like the Hindus are, okay? And I came out of the Catholic Church, okay? So I understand. I never looked at that as if it was an idol, right? I never really understood it, to be honest with you, or why you're doing it. But you know what? There's ignorance in there, okay? Just because you're doing something ignorantly doesn't mean it's not wrong, okay? So, you know, idol, you know, making graven images, bowing down to them, that is still wrong today. I don't believe that every graven image is inherently an idol. But I'll say this, if there is a graven image that's associated with a religion, you need to stay away from that. Okay? Don't have that garbage around you, okay? I'm not even gonna have like these different images just to be like, oh, here's what represents all these different religions. You know, like in my office, I'm like, well, here's what the Buddha has, and this is what this person has. I don't want that garbage in my office, right? I want to grind that garbage to powder, okay? If I could take every image of Buddha, every image of all these different gods from Hinduism, and all those different gods that are out there, and the Baphomet, you know, as well, you know, which is the satanic idol that they have, if I can grind them all to powder, I would. But they're out there, but I don't believe you should have any of that, okay? I don't care if you aren't bowing down and worshiping those. I don't think that should be around your house. It shouldn't be anywhere near you. You know what? We should be simple concerning evil when it comes to that type of stuff. But when it comes to, like, your kids' toys, ornaments, stuff like that, if it's not associated with a religion that people are worshiping it, I don't believe it's wrong. Now, if you have a proclivity to bow down and worship it, then don't have it, okay? You know, I don't think I ever had a proclivity to bow down and worship my Ninja Turtles or my dinosaurs or anything like that when I was a kid. And some of those were wooden. Some of those were different materials and stuff like that. So I don't believe that those were inherently wrong. I don't believe it's wrong for our kids to have those things. Now, if it becomes superstitious, then yes. You know, if you're like, this is my lucky. Now, listen, kid. Toddlers are different, okay? Toddlers have their little blankie. They have their little stuffed animal that they have to have next to them. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about adults that literally say, I can't. I have to have this with me, or it's bad luck, right? You know, you've heard all that, the superstition of like, well, you knocked over salt, you need to throw it over your shoulder. You walked underneath a ladder, you broke a thing. I would like to do a performance for you where I literally dump out salt like this, walk underneath a ladder, break a mirror, and like burn a rabbit's foot. I don't know. I don't know what else there is out there that's like superstitious, but you know what? I don't give a rip about that. You know, as far as all these, you know, like I can't go out the same door I came in, and it's like all these weird like OCD things that people have. You know, that's just superstition. But that's the second commandment. And Lord willing, we'll be going through all the commandments as the weeks go on here. So that's end with a word of prayer today. Father, we thank you for today, and thank you for your word. And Lord, just pray that you'd help us to not have any idols in our lives, and Lord, just to worship you, and Lord, to know that, hey, you know, these physical idols are still out there today, and that it will play a big part in the very end. And so it needs to be preached against to not be worshiping these graven images that are out there, not to have them near us in the church building here or anything like that. And Lord, we love you and pray all this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.